Today's Keisho will be on Case 70 from the Book of Serenity. Case 70 is entitled Jinshan Asks About Nature. Introduction. One who hears the scent-bearing elephant crossing the river has already gone with the flow. Even one who knows that birth is unborn is stayed by birth. If you go on talking about before concentration and after concentration, making bamboo shoots and making bamboo rope, you will be marking the boat when the sword is long gone already. Kicking the wheel of potential into motion, how can you particularly travel on one road? Let's try to bring this up. Case. Master Jinshan asked Master Zhuishan, clearly knowing the unborn nature of life, why are we stayed by life? Zhuishan said, bamboo shoots will eventually become bamboo, but if you use them now for bamboo rope, can you make them serve the purpose? Jinshan said, later on, you'll be enlightened on your own. Zhuishan said, I am just this way. What is your meaning? Jinshan said, this is the monastery superintendent's quarters. That is the cook's quarters. Zhuishan then bowed. Verse, empty and at ease without dependence, lofty and serene, untrammeled, home and country peaceful, those who arrive are rare. A little bit of powder divides ranks and grades. The fluid, clear mind and body is beyond right and wrong ended. Standing alone on earth, there is no beaten track. I am very, very happy to be practicing with you all today. It's a wonderful, beautiful day. We're all here at Sesshin. Many people had to make all kinds of arrangements to get here and to be here with their work and family responsibilities. But here we all are, and it's just great. I'm so glad you can be here. It's a great pleasure to practice with each of you, and I was just so happy to see you last night, and I'm so happy to be sitting with you this morning. Sesshin is, I think, the most wonderful thing in the world. I really believe that. I personally love Sesshin, and I look forward to them as they're coming. And when I leave with regret, because I just think this is such an amazing institution and such an amazing idea. People go to school to study all kinds of subjects, so if you want to become a computer scientist, you can take courses at Rutgers in the computer science department. And if you want to, even if you want to study poetry, there's actually a department of English, and you can just sit around all day and read poems, you know. And if you like poems the way I do, that's fantastic, you know. You know, if you don't like poems and you don't like computer science or environmental science, maybe you like to cook, and I myself like to cook, but I never went to school to learn to be a good cook, and I kind of regret that I didn't, because I really sometimes wish I knew more about the properties of food and what spices to add to what and so on. You know, you can go to cooking school. And it can be very prestigious. You could go to Cordon Bleu or one of the other culinary institutes, and you can really learn to cook. You know, it's possible to study poetry without becoming an English major and taking courses, or to read novels without becoming an English major. But when you read books with other people in a structured environment, you often find that you read the books more carefully, and you also read more than you would on your own. I know that one summer I decided I was going to do some additional reading, but I had this problem and that obstacle, and this, you know, interest got in my way and so on. And at the end of the summer, I hadn't done nearly the reading I had set out to do. And then when I went back to college and I was taking a course, it was like the modern novel. We had like 8 or 9 novels to read, and I really sat down and read all of those novels. And so having a structure really helps, and having other people with a similar desire and intention really helps. It makes it possible to have a much deeper experience. Now, people can go to school for computer science or environmental science or poetry or even cooking, but there actually aren't any schools for enlightenment, you know, really. This is like a school for enlightenment, right? This is like a school for enlightenment. This is an opportunity to practice in an intense way that probably most people just don't have the self-discipline, the courage, and so on, to do on their own. You know, there are people who are solitary practitioners. The great Xu Yun would practice up in the mountains by himself, and he would sit all day sometime, like literally just sit down and not get up until the day was over. So day come, begins to rise, he would have maybe some rice and some tea and go to the bathroom and then sit down and not get up until the sun was going down. But those kinds of people come along once every 400 or 500 years. And more generally, most of us wouldn't have that kind of self-discipline and determination, even if a part of us really wanted to do it. So something like Sesshin is just so wonderful, because we have a very challenging schedule, and we've all sort of made a promise, right, that we're going to do this together, and we're going to hold each other up. We're holding each other up. You know, we're going to support one another. We're going to assist one another. During the work period, some people are chopping vegetables. Some people are mopping the floor. All of this is like a collective effort. And everybody's working hard to make it possible to do this practice. And even if you were very determined, I think it would be hard to do this much meditation in a day on your own. But when you come here and you sit in this kind of a structure, it's possible to go far beyond what you imagine to be your limits. You know, if you just decided one day I'm going to just sit all day, you know, you might be able to sit for 9 hours, but after like 4 or 5 hours, you might just say, that's it, I can't go on. But in this structure, you know, you more or less are pushed and pulled along by the structure, you know. And so 9 hours is doable, and we're doing it together. This is just so admirable, and it's so effective. It's just so effective. And I have gone through hundreds, more than 100 sesshins. I mean, at least 5 a year for, I guess, 30-some years. So, not hundreds, but 100 and, I don't know, 60, 70, something like that. Is that right? 5 a year for 30 years is 150. So I've done at least 5. Sometimes I've done 8. So you go through this process over and over again with people who have the same, and I think, noble aspiration, and who are holding each other up and supporting one another. Day one is you're sort of like leaving behind your concerns. So almost everybody comes to sesshin with all kinds of worries and troubles. And all day, sometimes on the first day, people still are sort of like reviewing those in their mind. There's a tendency to hold on to those or to be gripped by those. But then around day two, people begin to let that go and stay more in the moment, just being more in the moment. And often on day two, people get tired. And they have to go deeper into mushin, into the mind, into samadhi, in order to continue. And when people go deep enough into samadhi, into mushin, they begin to tap into this other energy, this like deep energy. You encounter, it's almost like a paradox, right? Because you encounter this great stillness. On day three of a sesshin, you can encounter this great stillness. It's like this motionlessness at the heart of, even if everything is noisy around you, and even if you're in a lot of pain, inside you, there's a, so to speak, there's a place which is absolutely still and motionless. And if you can get there and stay there, you begin to feel very serene and very very calm. And yet, if you stay there long enough, you begin to have this tremendous energy, tremendous outflowing of energy. This is so beautiful. This is like life energy. This is life energy. This is like the energy of the universe, in my opinion. In this room, there's two plaques, and as I was sitting here preparing for this talk, I looked up at the plaque, and it says, "I believe in a creative power at work in the universe, in the mystery and wonder of life." Now, the thing is, that's an idea. I believe this is true. But beliefs only take you so far. Beliefs only take you, so you can believe in that power, in that energy, but believing doesn't put you there. It just tells you there's a place to go. But sesshin is all about going there. See, I mean, just to say, "I believe in a creative power at work in the universe," that doesn't necessarily give you any energy, right? It's reassuring, but there's still like this distance. And sometimes it's experienced as a great distance, a great separation. So many people in their lives feel frightened, angry, confused, self-hating, and so on. And all of this negativity creates this sense of being not at home in the world, like separated from everything around you. And this condition is actually very exhausting. If you're always afraid, if you're always afraid that the next minute is going to bring some terrible threat, you're spending a lot of your energy just being alert for the dangers to come, It's like your tight, every muscle is held tight, because you're expecting a blow to come, you know. And this is actually very draining, and it's very tiring. So I think lots of people have like a kind of exhaustion. I know so many people who just, you know, how's it going? They say, oh, I'm really exhausted. And I run into these people at work, I run into them here and there, and I think it must be the way we live in the modern world, you know. So when you come to Sesshin, it's not just about saying, I believe. In fact, Sesshin is not about belief. It's about going deeply into the mind and peeling back the layers of the mind and getting to like the core of the mind, if you want to put it that way. And at the core of the mind, there's this stillness, this unshakable stillness, which has no, it's like water, it has no features, it has no flavor, and it has no color. It's a mu shin. It has no characteristics. But when you enter that state, it's serene, and but also deeply energizing. And if you stay there long enough, it really transforms you. And if you stay there for, say, 2 or 3 days, when you leave here, even if you came exhausted and tired, you'll leave here with this beautiful energy, sort of buzzing energy, beautiful humming, ceaseless pulsing energy. Yeah? And it's a beautiful experience. And if you want to make Zen your life, you keep doing that over and over and over again. And it's like saturating yourself with this energy. There's a comic book character that I liked when I was a kid. His name was Green Lantern. And it's odd that they haven't made a movie out of Green Lantern. They've made so many movies out of all these other superheroes. But Green Lantern was a pilot, and one day he was in his plane, and his plane miraculously lifted up in the air, and it took him into the Amazon jungle, and there was a spacecraft that had crashed there. And there was this alien in the spacecraft, and he gives this pilot a magic lantern and a ring, and he says, if you wear this ring, you can do all these magic deeds. You can fly through the air and so on. But the ring runs out of power, so you need to use the lantern as your energy source, you know. And so the Green Lantern, naturally he has to wear a mask for some reason, and he flies through the air with a uniform on. Every once in a while he has to charge up his ring in the lantern, which he keeps it in a hidden room in his house. As a kid, I just thought that was very cool. I know that sometimes Jeff wears a green, he wears the emblem, the Green Lantern emblem. So when I first saw him in that t-shirt, I thought, oh, okay, brother, you understand, you know, the way of the Green Lantern, you know. But indeed, Jeff sits very well. So, this is like charging up you're putting your ring to the lamp and charging your batteries, you know, or saturating yourself in this beautiful energy, season after season, year after year, and this is really like you're becoming saturated with this energy, and it's so life sustaining, and so forgiving, and kind, and it's so loving. And healing, and so on and so on. It's just a beautiful way to live. This is the Zen way to live. And you know, we get up every day and we charge our batteries. You know, we sit down and enter mushin, enter samadhi and mushin. But when we come to sesshin, this is like, you know, this is like deep saturation, right? And it's a beautiful way to live. You know, one of the Buddha's students is a Mahakashapa. Kashapa means like a drinker of light, drinker of light. And we Zen people, we people who do sesshin, we're all kashapas, you know. This is like drinking the light. It is such a beautiful way to live. So here we are. Spring is coming, and we're all together, and we're sitting down on the cushion, entering deep mushin and samadhi, and we're charging up, we're saturating ourselves in this beautiful mu energy. It's so beautiful, so precious, that such a thing as this exists is really extraordinary. And it's, you know, so precious for me, very precious to be practicing with each of you. And everybody's showing great dedication. And I know in some cases it's hard to come here and requires personal sacrifice. But you know, it's so beautiful. Of course, it is a challenge at first. You know, Sandy's husband, Bob, came to a couple sesshin, and he decided that that Zen was not his cup of tea, which is, you know, he's a very nice guy, and I understand. But he said something that was interesting. He said, you know, I was in the Marines, and I went through some very hard training in the Marines. He said, but this was, sesshin was harder than any training I ever did. And I think that's true for a while. But eventually, it's absolutely reverse. It's like, you know, I think living without sesshin is very difficult to imagine. But still, there is this challenge. You know, this requires you to go to get in touch with a deeper part of yourself. You know, it requires you. You can't survive at sesshin unless you can find and get in touch with that deeper part of yourself. And everybody has sometimes struggles to do that. My first sesshin was just so difficult for me. I was in pain all the time, and there was, there just seemed to be a position I could adopt that was satisfactory. And I used to actually be heavier than I am now. When I was in college, I was very athletic, and I probably weighed maybe 15 pounds more than I do now. And I used to, you know, get a lot of exercise. And in the summer, I worked construction. So I used to do things like, I used to help pour cement. And big cement truck would come and pour cement into footings for a big apartment building. And I would spend like 8 hours a day taking a rake and pulling cement down through these trenches. And let me tell you, I had some biceps, you know. And I was really strong. I mean, I used to be able to lift a lot of weight. One of my jobs one summer was carrying packages of roofing shingles up a ladder in the same apartment complex. One summer I was working on the footings, and all day long I would just take a rake and pull cement down these footings so that, you know, the cement truck could only get to certain areas. So shoveling cement and pulling it along in these trenches with a rake was my whole summer one summer. And then I came back the next summer, and they were putting the roof on the apartment complexes, and they had a big long ladder, and we were supposed to climb up to the top, and on our shoulders we carried a package of shingles, and these are composite shingles. If you ever go to Home Depot and you ever see one of these packets, just try to heft it, you know. And anyway, you know, I would just take one, you know, up to the top, another one, and I thought nothing of it. You know, I did that all day long. And a number of years ago, I tried to carry a package. I tried to lift a package, you know, because I was doing some home repairs on my garage. And I was like, whoa. And I thought, did I actually carry these up a ladder? And I tried to carry half a package up the ladder, and I almost fell off the ladder. So I carried like a quarter of a package up, you know, on my shoulder at a time. Anyway, the point is, when I used to hike at like 50 miles at a, you know, crack. So when I came to my first sesshin, I thought I was really like I was very fit and very, you know, physically robust. And I have to say, I was actually rather a little bit arrogant about what a good shape I was in, you know. Anyway, at this time, Genki Roshi was about 45 years old, and he also was in good shape. But Genki Roshi is about 5 feet tall, and maybe he's even shorter than that. It put me in a different perspective to see Genki Roshi sit down on a cushion and not move for like 3 hours. And my first sesshin, I could barely sit still for 10 minutes, you know. And I realized, I was kind of stupid, you know. I realized that there's a different kind of strength, you know, there's a different kind of strength. That there's a kind of strength which is, you know, being able to do 100 push-ups. But Genki had this other kind of strength which was really quite, I suddenly realized, you know, I thought Genki was quote-unquote, you know, he probably weighed less than 100 pounds, he was 5 feet tall. And then I suddenly realized he's a person of extraordinary strength. You know, and I realized I don't have this kind of strength at all. I once saw Genki sit down for like 7 hours and not move, and he just bounded. He got up and he's laughing, and he went into the kitchen to make noodles. You know, so there's a different kind of strength that you get if you do this kind of practice. You know, you learn how to empty yourself out and tap into that extraordinary energy. And if you get to be good at emptying yourself out, you know, you can deal with anything with the most extraordinary composure and steadiness of mind, and also determination. Like iron determination. You know, most people are easily deterred by misfortunes and changes in the state of things. But, some people have like imperturbability. And Genki really had like imperturbability. Nothing ever seemed to upset him. Nothing ever seemed to knock him down. And the history of Zen is full of such people, you know, full of such people. At one time, Bodhidharma came to China, and there were people in China who really didn't want Bodhidharma to be, they were afraid of Bodhidharma. And they thought that he was a threat to their culture, and they saw him really as like a very bad person. And somebody tried to, according to Zen legend, somebody tried to poison Bodhidharma. And according to the legend, his teeth were destroyed by the poison that he had started to drink something that was poison, and he didn't drink it, and but it hurt his teeth. So in a drawing, they'll show he's got like these broken up teeth. And maybe there's some truth to that. You know, most people would say, I'm getting out of here. You know, people are trying to kill me. But he didn't leave China. And in the history of Buddhism, you know, again and again, people are undeterred by misfortune. You know, and that's a deeper strength. It's easy to carry shingles up on a roof, you know. It's easy to, I don't think I could do 100 push-ups now, but it's easy to do 100 push-ups. But it's much harder to have that other kind of strength. And I actually think you should stay in good shape, you know. You should go for a jog, do some push-ups, it's okay. But these are different kind of push-ups we're doing now, you know. It's a different kind of strength, and I think it's really deeper strength. When I came to my first sesshin, I didn't have that kind of strength. I had a lot of physical strength, but I didn't have this other strength. And every sit was just like torture to me. And I was amazed by Genki Roshi, who could just sit down and not move for, you know, like 3 hours, utterly calm and so, you know, I understand how difficult sesshin is for beginners. And as I said last night, everybody here understands that it's a struggle. And there's a chair over by the wall, and if you need it, you know, it's okay to get up and sit in the chair. You know, there's no way to get to be physically fit except to like start getting some exercise. So, you know, if you want to run a marathon, you have to run a mile first. And if the first mile you run is going to be hard, and it'll be harder the next day, because after you run a mile, your muscles will be sore the next day. But little by little, you know, you run a mile for a week or two, and then you run 2 miles for a week or two, and then you run 3 miles, and so on and so on. Eventually you can do 10 or 12 miles or 15 miles. Well, sesshin is a little bit like that too. If it's hard to get through 25 minutes, you know. You just have to sort of build up your inner strength, you know, your inner strength. And that means focusing on the breath with great intensity. So actually, you can't use the other kind of strength to deal with this problem. So no matter how much power you have physically, or even intellectually, you know, it's no good in the face of this pain. You can't think your way out of this physical discomfort, and you can't tough it out. You know, you can't really. You have to learn how to empty yourself out, and that takes some doing. It's a different kind of strength. When you sit on the cushion, it's very important to try to keep your back straight and breathe long breaths through your abdominal region. So you squeeze gently, and you fix your attention on the breath. And as you squeeze and the breath goes out, your breath is going to naturally become longer and softer. And the most powerful breath isn't the breath that is like, you know, it's not like when you really put a lot of force behind. The most powerful breath is the softest, longest breath. It's like this long silver thread. You know, so You gently squeeze the abdomen and you fix your attention on your breath. And the breath goes out, 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 until there's nothing there. It's just like the breath, you follow the breath until there's nothing. And then you take another breath. So you squeeze and you release. You squeeze and you release. And you keep following the breath out to this place where there's just nothing. It's like then there's nothing. Now, what usually happens when you get to the nothing is your mind starts filling it up with thoughts, you know? So normally, if you're squeezing the breath out, if you really fix your attention on your breath, there won't be too many thoughts until you run out of breath, and then the thoughts tend to arise at that moment. And of course, at that moment also, you'll become aware of your pain, more aware of your pain. And what you need to do is to go right back to your next breath. And if you have pain, whatever you do, please don't localize it. So if you have your pain in your right leg or something, don't think about your right leg. Don't form a mental image. What you need to do is just be aware of sort of like generalized discomfort. And then fix your entire attention on the breath itself. And so you follow the breath out, and you hold your attention on the breath. Now, if you're in discomfort, you know, there's a tendency to want to move. It's like a natural tendency. You have like a flight or fight response, right? So if you're in pain, naturally you'll try to do something to stop the pain. But the only thing that would really stop the discomfort is to get up off the cushion, leave the room, and jump in your car and drive away. So that, unless you want to do that, that's off the table. So what you have to do instead is find some other way of responding to the pain. And the way to do it is to drop out of your small self. So when you sit down on the cushion, if you're not in pain, please don't waste any time thinking about anything, because you can be sure a pain is going to come. And so you need to get ready before it comes. And the way to get ready is to find your breath, find it, and begin to work with your heart, squeezing your abdomen. And as the breath goes out, you fix your attention like a beam. You know, you've seen those beams that shine in the sky at night. It's like the very powerful beam of light that goes right to some object. You want to direct your consciousness right to the breath, like a beam of light, and you want to follow the breath out. And then at the end of your breath, pain is going to arise, but don't dwell on the pain. Come right back to your next breath. See? And you keep doing this until your mind becomes exhausted. Now, you know, your mind will become more powerful, just like jogging. You know, your mind will become more powerful. You'll be able to hold your attention. And it won't take weeks. You know, you'll be able to do it. You'll be able to greatly improve your mental focus and stamina in a couple days. So you just keep fixing your attention on the breath. And when things are going right, see, you breathe out. And you breathe out softly, long breath, and at the end of the breath, you know, maybe there's nothing for a split second, and thoughts start arising, or you become aware of your pain. And then you just go right back to your breath, and you can visualize yourself sort of like sweeping your pain away. So you like sweep, and as you're watching the breath, you go, wah! So the pain recedes. And then at the end of the breath, it comes back, and then two, and the pain recedes. Three, and the pain recedes, see? Pain. Now, the pain isn't going to go away for a while. That is to say, you know, at this session, the pain is probably going to be present much of the time. But what you'll notice is that at some point, the pain is very, very strong and present. But eventually, by sweeping it, you'll be able to push it away. It'll be like, instead of screaming in your ear, it will be like murmuring in a distance. And you'll be able to, and the more you do this, the more your mind is dropping down into a deeper and deeper state of concentration. So if you just keep fighting with your pain in this way, if you want to put it that way, if you just keep working with your pain this way, your mind is going to become deeper and deeper, and you're going to be entering a deeper and deeper samadhi state. Now, what will eventually happen, if you are you're diligent about this, is that you're going to find a place. There is a place where if you just keep watching the breath and watching the breath, you're going to reach this place. It's usually experienced at the end of the breath, where it's absolutely still, and it's motionless, and it's like the eye of a storm. You know, when I was a little boy, I remember on a military base. It was like the 4th of July, and we were having like a big 4th of July celebration, and a hurricane hit our base. Everybody had to, we were having the party at the pool, the base pool, and everybody had to go into the men's room, and we had big men and women's room. Everybody went in there, and we could hear the wind howling outside. It was just this incredible storm, and it knocked down trees and so on. And then it all stopped, and we all went outside, and it was very bright, but then it got dark again, and we were in the eye of the storm, you know. And it was quite remarkable, because I thought the storm was over and the sky was clear. But these storms are quite huge, and we were just in the eye. But there's this place inside of yourself which is like the eye of a storm, and it's part of your mind could be buzzing like a beehive or screaming, but if you can get to this place, it's like you can just push everything away. It's absolutely still, and you can handle anything. It's imperturbable place. So that's what you're looking for. And when you find it, it will be quite, this is a very deep version of the same experience people have on a night of sitting. Sometimes at the university, people will come up and say to me, you know, I felt like my body disappeared. Well, that's a shallow version of the same deep experience I'm describing. When you're at the eye of the tornado, the eye of the storm, you know, you're in this very still place, and probably your body will be largely gone. This is a deeper version of what happens on a weeknight. And this is where you have to go. Unless you want to drive away, you've got to find this place. Once you can do this, once you can empty yourself out, this is a different kind of strength. And I think it's far more valuable, really, than the other kind. Because most of our real conflicts in life are with our illusions, you know, and with our fears, and our anger, and so on and so on. Those are the things that really, really defeat us. So if you can find this place, there's nothing you can't accomplish. But it just takes a great deal of self-discipline and determination, you know, there's no question about it. People who practice Zen have a kind of like a warrior spirit. You know, the people who do this have a kind of warrior spirit. Don't take this the wrong way, you know. I mean, I think somebody like Gandhi had a warrior spirit, really. You know, he was, he believed in ahimsa, nonviolence. But he also believed in like facing your obstacles, you know, facing things head on with courage and determination. And of course, Gandhi had extraordinary inner strength. This is a different kind of strength that you need to find in yourself. Every time you move, you actually undermine yourself. And so if you move, sometimes you can't stand it anymore and you move, it's okay. Don't blame yourself or be embarrassed. But when you get restless and you're in pain and you move, it makes it harder to be still. So every time you move, you're just, it's just going to snowball. It's like you think, if I move, that I'll be able to find a position that's more comfortable. But actually, after a while, there's no comfortable position. So it's like a futile quest, right, for a comfortable position. And so the more you move, it becomes, actually, believe it or not, body and mind are really linked. So actually, if you want to make the mind still and clear, you have to make the body motionless. And if you start moving the body, the mind gets activated. So it's like taking a jar of water. If you put it on the shelf, the water becomes very still. But if you take the water in your hands and you rock it back and forth, the water gets very agitated and choppy. So every time you move, it's like the water is getting agitated and choppy. You've got to keep the body motionless for the mind to reach this deep stillness. And of course, we do have this reflex that says, move, 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 you know, run, run, run. But instead of moving your arm or your leg, move your breath. So when you have that impulse to move, move the breath. You know, move the breath instead of the arm. Move the breath instead of the leg. You only have to get through one breath at a time. If you come in and you sit down on the cushion and you say, oh my God, I've got half an hour, that's like a fatal mistake. Please don't do that. Just get through the next breath and the next breath and the next breath. And pretty soon, half an hour will be gone. But don't permit yourself to think of time. Just focus on the breath. Master Jinshan asked Master Zhuishan, "We know all about Zen, but why do we know all about the Buddha's teachings? You know, we know all about the unborn, but why are we still afraid? Why do we still get angry? Why are we still?" And basically, Zhuishan says, "Look, you know, knowledge doesn't do it." Knowing, you can read books on Zen, you can read books on Buddhism, you can study the sutras from now until doomsday, but that doesn't cut it, as we say. Right? That doesn't really transform. What you really have to do is practice what we're doing. This is Buddhism. Right? This is, reading books doesn't do it, doesn't change anything. So we know that that something is the case. Why can't we act? You know, I know, there's such a thing as enlightenment, or I believe there's such a thing. But why am I still so afraid? Why am I still so angry and so on? But the thing is, you just have to keep practice. It's practice. Practice. It's just what we're doing. This is the road to enlightenment. There isn't any other road. This is the road. I mean, you might do Tibetan visualization, but it's the road of practice. This is it. This is what it's all about. So we've come here to do engage in the real thing. And we're doing it. With great determination and courage. Everybody in this room is doing it with great determination and courage. And it's wonderful to see. So we're all doing our work, you know, like cook has to cook, the head of the monastery has to organize the monastery, and we're doing our work. We're sitting here sweating bullets on the cushion, pushing pain away and dropping into deep mushin. And that's how it's done. But the end result is so beautiful, you know, that once you reach that place, all of this will seem like small potatoes, you know? All of this discomfort will seem like small potatoes. I used to go to my bed at night with my teeth chattering, I swear. You know, I was just like so wiped out, exhausted, and my teeth would be chattering. But now I just laugh. You know, what a small price to pay for such a beautiful way of life. So everybody's doing a great job. It's day one of Sesshin. Beautiful path. go deep into Wuxing, push your pain away with your breath. Drop down and find that still place, that empty place, and just be saturated. Just be saturated by that beautiful energy.